Welcome. This session is Surviving Struggling to Read. Let's pray and ask for the Lord's blessing. Father, I thank you so much for the privilege of teaching our children at home, and especially our children that don't fit into the easy boxes that everybody else does. Lord, I pray that you would give Samuel and that you would give me the words to say this morning, that you give your people the ears to hear what you want them to hear. We love you and praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
I'm Melanie Young.
And I'm Samuel.
I have homeschooled for 21 years. We have six boys in a row, two little girls after that. Samuel is our fourth son out of six. And we're going to be talking about our story and some things that we took away from our struggle, because it was us, the two of us.
Indeed.
To bring Samuel to reading. You know, our first son, I had read all the books Better Late Than Early and read about how boys, you know, develop academic school skills later, and I was prepared to start him late. And then he came to me at 3 and said, "Mama, please teach me to read." And I said, no, you're not ready for that. He said, "Please teach me to read." Well, he was reading chapter books by the time he was 5. And then...
Did you say that this was John, not me?
No, this is John, not you. Okay. Then our second child came along. And he said, and he was reading well by 5. Then our third child came along, and he was reading well by 5. And I thought, you know, that better late than early stuff was foolish. And I am one great homeschool mom.
Well, you
are. I'm so good at this. And then my sweet Sam came along. And Samuel, I knew from very early, was super smart. I knew he was intelligent. And so I thought, okay, great. We start learning to read at 4. And I got out the books, and it didn't work. I tried to teach him the letters, and one day he knew the letters, and the next day he didn't. And he couldn't remember them. And he couldn't put the sounds together. And I was so frustrated. And, you know, we'd been through some things with other subjects. You know, I found out my first son loved the Latin program we chose and did great with it. The second son couldn't use it. We had to choose a different Latin program. I thought, it must be the phonics program. I see some smiles. Y'all been there, right? Try another phonics program. Didn't work. In fact, Samuel would sit down. We'd sit down and do phonics. He'd say, "Mama, I feel sick. My stomach hurts." And I thought he was old soldiering. I thought he was just lazy. He didn't want to do it because clearly he knew it yesterday. Why doesn't he know it today? I was devastated to learn several years later, after many tears, and both of us crying, and both of us frustrated, that knowing it one day and not the next is a huge sign of dyslexia. And that having a stomach ache and a headache when you're trying to read is a huge sign of you know, a learning disability and learning to read. And I just felt so bad because I disciplined him sometimes. I fussed at him. I thought it was on purpose. I thought that he was not trying. And when I realized what the situation was, then I really cried. Because I realized I had been asking him to do something he was not able to do. Because you see, when someone has dyslexia and some other learning reading challenges, then they have a great ability to move things around in their mind. A lot of inventors, sculptors are dyslexic. But if you move a B around, it becomes a P or a Q or a D or a G without a long tail. You know, you can't understand it at all. So it makes sense that one day you could read the word, the next day you couldn't. You know, because your mind's moving it around. It makes no sense. And when letters are moving around on the page, I'd feel sick too. Mm-hmm. Well, we had to press on. And what we learned is that there are no magic answers in learning to read. There are people who will tell you, "We will cure your child's learning disability." There aren't any magic answers like that.
There really aren't. There's no phonics program, no therapy or anything that's just going to cure it. So yeah, you need to guard yourself and your child from trying to take the magic pill.
And what we learned is that there's a lot more involved in this whole process than the process of teaching them to read.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that's what I didn't get, because we've got to keep a goal in mind that, you know, our goal is to help them become an adult that can accomplish the mission that God gives them in life and still has the confidence to do it. You know, and how do you do that? I think the first thing that you got to do is not quit.
That's probably the biggest thing.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah. Don't quit. And it's really tempting because the grandmothers and the friends and everybody else say, oh, you know, maybe you need to put him in school where the experts can help him. We were protected from that because of our experience. My brother was dyslexic and struggled with learning to read. I was very academically oriented. Unfortunately, he had a lot of the same teachers I did. So when he got in their class, they thought that he was just lazy and good for nothing. He had a teacher in the seventh grade that made him stand up for the class and spell and would mock him. Y'all, it took me years to forgive that woman. Every time I drove by her driveway in my hometown, I wanted to park the car and get out and beat her up. Mm-hmm. You know? Because of what she did to my brother and his confidence. Well, what about reading specialists in the school? We have a relative who was a reading specialist. And we're talking on the phone one day, and you know, I'm thinking, I've got something in common with you. I know about reading here. I said, well, what phonics program do you use to teach these kids to read? And she said, what's phonics? I said, what? She said, I've heard that term before, but what is phonics? This is the reading recovery specialist at a school. I said, you know, it's where you teach them the sounds of the letters. You teach them C says K, and A says A, and T says T. And then you sound out cat. She said, cool. Wow. Yeah, she was just using a look-say method, not trying to teach any phonics at all.
Another important thing to remember is that God chose you individually to be their parent. And no matter what you're currently going through with raising them, it was you specifically that God chose, not the reading specialist down the street, not another mom in the co-op, but you specifically because of your challenges and your gifts.
You know, so you can't quit, okay? You can't just give up and quit. And you can't let your kid quit.
And that's going to be one of the hardest things.
It really is. You know, you got to encourage your child to keep trying. You've got to encourage them that this is not, that they're going to get through this, that they're going to conquer it, you know, that everybody has gifts and trials, that and they come together, that, you know, you may struggle with learning to read, but God's given you a special gift that goes along with that. And you may not even know it yet or understand it, but trust me, you've got special stuff in you, and God's giving you this trial for a purpose. And teaching them to love God. And don't let them give up as you try new things. Because, do you remember, you were saying something about that the other day. We were talking to a mom, and you said that you just felt like, well, great, here's just another program.
Mm-hmm. We went through many a program. Just about everything in the conference hall, and many which aren't, we went through.
So you have to be kind of firm but loving. We are going to do this. We're going to try it for this length of time, this school year, whatever.
Now, that's an important part of it. Set a positive start and end date. Because when you're in a situation where you feel like it's hopeless, whether it's a learning disability or just you're very slow on the uptake, it is really easy to feel like you're just wallowing in it. And when you're done with this one, you're going to start another one and another one and another one, and it feels impossible. But if you say you're going to start right here and you're going to end right here a month later, then the kid can go, okay, I can do this for a month. You know, even if I don't understand it, I can go through the motions for a month. And you know what? If you succeed, then great. But if not, then they don't give up trying 2 days in.
And so you start easy, and then you ramp up, okay, as you find some success. This is a verse that carried me through a whole lot of this. I mean, this was devastating to me. Because, you know, we had 3 successful readers. And now all of a sudden, I had no idea what to do. And I felt helpless. And I felt like I'm not doing this child any good. And I didn't know what to do. And to remember this, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose, Romans 8:28. I realized that, you know, God has a reason for us to be going through this. He has purpose in it. There's goals in it. it's not just that he whimsically said, oh, let's watch this one suffer for a while. You know, that instead he's saying, my beloved child, this is going to be tough, but it's going to be really good at the end. I think one of the first things you have to do is abandon false expectations. We have this idea that kids learn to read in the first grade. Now with Common Core, they're supposed to read in kindergarten. The funny thing about it is that you have to be developmentally ready to learn to read. And if you're not developmentally ready, you're not going to read, no matter what programs you use, no matter how much time somebody spends with you. And the age that people typically are ready to learn to read and learn to read varies from 2 on the small end of the bell curve. There's a few kids, you know, just maybe 1 or 2 out of 1,000 that learn to read at 2. And then it goes up, and more kids, as we get older in age, more kids learn to read. The majority learn to read at 6 or 7, but then you keep going down that bell curve, because remember, a bell curve describes most things in the world, right? Majority learn there, and then it goes on down. And some kids don't even learn to read till they're 13. Okay? Now, so why do we teach reading in the first grade? Because that's going to hit the majority of kids at the right point. Okay? But does that mean that that's going to be the best time to learn to read for all these kids? No. Or the best time to read for all these kids? No. And so, if you're struggling with your student to learn to read, it's probably not your failure.
Or the child being lazy.
Or the child's lack of intelligence. In fact, these reading struggles actually tend to be linked to high intelligence. Okay?
It's probably not a phonics program. I know that's the easy scapegoat, because then you can just say, oh, it's them. Get rid of them. But it's probably not the phonics program.
But all children are individuals. And God made them, and he made them with a particular time they're supposed to learn to read. Mm-hmm. And it's not a competition. You know, in homeschooling, we've done a great job of making sure our kids are not peer dependent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fantastic. They understand that they're individuals and they're not bound up by what their peers believe and need. But us moms, my word, we're peer dependent. You know, well, my child's reading chapter books.
Well,
who cares?
Reads Latin.
I know. Who cares? I was talking to a mom in the vendor hall last week in a different conference, and she was saying, my 5-year-old's reading chapter books, and I'm not sure what book to put them in next. I said, baby, you need to put up the chapter books and go get a bunch of picture books, because they're missing some great books they need to read at this age. She's like, really? I said, yeah, there's no point in reading chapter books when you're 5. You know, you need to read Caps for Sale. And Make Way for Ducklings. It's part of your culture, part of your education. And so it's not a competition. You know, you don't get a gold prize for teaching your children to read by a certain age. You know, and we have sent 3 kids to college on college scholarships, and we've never had anybody ask them how old they were when they learned to read.
Really?
Nobody cares.
Oh.
You know, and Samuel is being recruited by colleges now and being recruited by college football programs. Nobody has asked him when he learned to read. Nobody cares. It's not a competition. You got to maintain hope, okay? This was really important for me. The Lord put his word in written form, and he told us to study it, and he's made us to read. It's not something evolutionary that maybe your kid missed. You know, it's not something that, you know, only a few intelligent people can learn to do. But God made us to read. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. 2 Timothy 2:15. God commands us to study his word. He gave it to us in written form. He has made your child with the ability to read. Okay, you're just not there yet. You want to talk about this a minute?
Well, one great thing Mom did to maintain hope in me is she was always researching and thinking about inspirational people throughout history which struggled with the same things I did. And she told me about Thomas Edison. You know, he was sent home from school, and the teacher told his mother that he was a retard and that he would never never be smart enough to do anything like an adult, basically. And, you know, the teacher told her that the light would never turn on, and it did. And General George Patton, he had horrific handwriting, was the lowest in his class at West Point.
Last in his class at West Point.
Oh, last,
Very, the lowest scores, last in his class, okay?
And yet he was infinitely more famous and did more with his generalship than anybody else in this class.
Leonardo da Vinci, who is anybody would tell you is one of the greatest geniuses that ever lived, they believe that he was dyslexic because they, as they look at his journals, he reverses letters and he misspells things, and they think that he was dyslexic.
And occasionally when he was writing notes for himself, not for others, he would actually write entire sentences backwards.
Agatha Christie, who is one of the top-selling authors of all time, was so severely dyslexic that when she would turn in her manuscripts to her editor, there was only one editor in her publishing company that could manage to decipher them, and she had to spend all day long on the phone with her trying to figure out what the words were. They were so badly misspelled. And yet, she became a famous author that everybody has heard of. And so when you introduce your kids to these characters, they realize, you know what? It's not that I'm dumb. I'm not dumb. It's not that this is going to cripple me the rest of my life. It's I'm in pretty good company here, okay? I think it helps to introduce them to adults and older teens.
This is very important. That reminds me of a story. When I was about, how old was I?
11.
Right before I learned how to read, I took a safe sitter course at the local hospital, and basically it's just a course where they taught you how to do CPR and how to babysit and everything in an approved way, what to do if someone's choking, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they had a written test that you had to take before you could get your certification. And I ended up getting one of the administrators, since I couldn't read yet, administered the test. And at the time, I was very, very emotional about this still and very embarrassed. And I was, before we took it, I was really upset. We were in a separate room. And I was crying. I told her, I'm so sorry. I know this is a bother. I mean, you aren't doing your normal work. This is upsetting your workflow, et cetera. I just apologized. And she said, no, you know what? It's okay. My husband is actually severely dyslexic, and he is the pastor at a huge mega church in the area. Is that he never writes a word of his sermons. He dictates them all to me. And that was amazing to me because it told me that not only are there people in the community like me which are succeeding, but there are people in the community which are doing great things for God in fields that would seem impossible with the exact same disability I had.
You know, a mom came up to us at a conference one time, and she said, I heard one of your sons had been a struggling reader. And I said, yeah, that's true.
Boy.
And she said, well, I don't think my son's ever going to learn how to read. And he's sitting right there.
Oh.
And he looked like he wanted to crawl in a hole. Well, I ignored her. And I looked at him. I said, son, let me tell you something. If somebody learns to read when they're 5 years old, do you know when they learn to read like an adult? He said, when? I said, when they're about 13. If they learn to read when they're 7, do you know when they learn to read like an adult? He said, 15? I said, no, 13. I said, do you know if they learn to read when they're 9? He was 9. Do you know when they learn to read like an adult? He said, 13. I said, yeah. If they learn to read when they're 11, do you know when they learn to read like an adult? He said, 13. I said, yeah, because see, as you get older, you develop an adult's mind. And you, where if you start studying reading and language arts when you're 5, yeah, it's going to take you, wow, 8 years to learn all this. If you learn it when you're 11 or 12, it's going to take you a year or two because you're bringing an adult's mind to it. You know, Hal tells a story in one of our sessions that in the Civil War, there was a huge revival in the Southern Army. And a lot of these farm boys that were illiterate wanted to read their Bibles all of a sudden. And so the chaplains would get the young men who knew how to read to teach the ones who didn't know how to read. They weren't trained teachers. And they found it took about 3 months to take a completely illiterate adult who signed his name with an X to reading the King James Version of the Bible. Yeah. And so those that learn late learn fast. So you know, you're not losing time. You're not getting behind. You know, it's going to happen, and it's going to happen really fast when it happens.
This is something I'm experiencing currently. Since fairly early, you know, in our culture, we introduce things like algebra and complex abstract things and chemistry and stuff pretty early to our kids. And it's something I've struggled with all throughout, you know, our middle school and early high school. And just in the past year or so, it's like developmentally it clicked. And all of a sudden, from going and spending hundreds of hours a year trying to learn something and not learning it, it's something where I would just barely have to look at it and then it makes sense. And I'm just rushing through all my old books and at an enormous pace because I'm now developmentally ready.
And when you struggle with something, you appreciate it and learning last humor with your friends?
Yeah, when I was, shortly after I learned how to read, about 11 and a half, 12, I was immersed in reading. I loved it. And it was just amazing for me, going from completely illiterate to reading things almost on a college level over the course of a year. It was just amazing. I was introduced to a world that was full of dragons and princesses and knights and heroes and historical mighty men and everything. And it was amazing. It was like a sixth sense almost. I mean, just magical. And I was, like everything else in my life, I was extremely enthused about this. I talked to all my friends. I was just like, there's this magical thing. And I'd explain it to them. And they were always just like, you know, reading's okay. Most of my friends learned to read when they were 6 through 8 or so. And they, although they learned how to read, they didn't value it like I did. And I realized because I struggled so long and it was so hard for me, I appreciated reading and loved it in a way that most of my friends never would.
One thing you need to do is get their siblings on the team. This can be really difficult because kids tend to be competitive. And it's like, yes, I'm better than you, especially a younger sibling who is racing ahead academically. And they've always been the younger sibling, and now they want to be bigger than the bigger sibling. And you've got to explain, okay, to the older siblings who it was easy for, you've got to explain to them. You've got to say, look, yeah, this was easy for you. It's not easy for him. And you've got to say, you know, he respects you or she respects you. She needs to know that you don't look down on her because she's struggling with this. And explain that to them. Explain that they've got things they're not so good at either, you know, and that they don't want somebody razzing them because they didn't do it. The younger siblings, you have absolutely got to not allow them to jump in and answer questions or mock their older sibling or look down on them. And this is a good memory verse for that. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. And that's Romans 12:3. That's a fantastic memory verse. The next one too. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function. The way I explain it to my kids is, you know, if everyone were farmers, we'd have to walk everywhere. And if everyone were engineers, we'd starve to death. That God made us all different with different skills and different abilities. And you've got different abilities than your siblings. And when you mock them for their different abilities, you are mocking God who made them. And you know, you've got to be super serious about this because it will destroy relationships if you don't. This is a part, and this is what provoked Samuel suggested this workshop. He said, we need to do this. Because he says, I don't think parents are understanding there's so much more involved here than learning to read, than the actual physical process. And he said, we need to talk to parents about this.
Even if your child doesn't have a learning disability and they're just learning a little bit later, it is shocking how socially awkward it can be for them, even if they're just a couple months behind their peers. It's a really, really big deal.
And you know, it's less so in homeschooling because we all use different curricula and stuff. Not if you put them in one of these co-ops where they're comparing themselves to 30 other kids. You got to be really careful about that. You've got a struggling reader. That's probably not the place for you, okay? But even simple things, you know, You get to a class that's about science, and you think this isn't going to be affected by their reading, and they have to fill out a registration form.
Or a name tag. That always terrified me as a kid, because you walk in, not only do you have to remember how to spell your name, but you write it down, and then you put a billboard that displays your handwriting on your chest to walk around with all day. And so it's the little things that you might not think about that are a really big deal.
And just those little things can make them feel like everybody's doing great and I'm the one hurting. And I'm different. I'm insecure. I'm alone. And make them not want to do that stuff. And so you, as the parent, have got to work through this with them. And what I recommend is that you give them some encouragement for those challenges. I remember we signed you up for a grassroots politics class. And you didn't want to go.
No, I didn't.
No. And I said, look, son, this hits your gifts. You're well-spoken. You're really politically aware. And I think this is going to be really good for you. I think it's going to give you some tools you can use later in life.
And that was key. She pointed out exactly, this will look good on your resume if you're going through this major in college and you want to get this sort of a job. This will look really good on this resume. And so I saw, I wasn't doing this just for mom. I wasn't doing this, you know, to look good right now. I was doing it so that I can make money later.
And it's important to be firm. Okay, we are going to do this. All right? No discussion. We are going to do this. Because it's easy to overprotect them. You know, say, okay, I don't want you to be stretched. I don't want you to be embarrassed. You know, because many of us remember being teased in school and how brutal it is. And we want to protect our children from that. And that's good. But we don't want to cripple them for life. We want them to be able to go out and conquer the world when they get to be adults. And so we've got to work them into these things while protecting them. And so, you know, you have to tell them everybody has fears and shyness. You know, you're worried about not being able to read. This girl's worried because she's overweight. You know, that boy's worried because he's growing too fast and he's awkward and he's on knees and elbows and he falls down. You know, and you've got to point out to them that everybody's got stuff. You know, I remember being at an event when I was in high school and feeling so fake. I had a smile on my face, but I was worried sick. And it's like the Lord suddenly let me look around at everybody and realize everybody's wearing a happy mask. And inside, everybody has worries and fears and shyness. And we've got to explain that to our kids that, you know, all have fallen short of the glory of God. There's none of us righteous, no, not one. There's nobody that meets the standard, nobody in the whole world. And that God created you, child, for a purpose.
Now, this is very important. You need to, just like with goals, you need to make sure they know that God created them for a purpose. It may be ministering to Aborigines. It may be ministering to kids in the ghetto. It may be flipping hamburgers. It may be digging ditches. But God created them for a very specific reason. So that knowledge may be enough to give them encouragement to keep going.
And reassure them that you're going to help them. You're going to prepare them for it. You're going to take care of it. Okay, so how do you prepare? Okay, first, you got to think through what's involved. And you know what? Honestly, we parents are so bad at this. I mean, I was bad at it. I think most everybody's bad at it. You got to think, is there going to be writing? Are they going to have to fill out a registration form, a name tag? Is there going to be any reading aloud? A lot of dyslexic kids or kids that are struggling with reading are horrified and terrified of Sunday school. Because typically in Sunday school, they take turns reading. And, you know, think about the body part you were the least happy with the way it works, okay, with the way it looks. Now, can you imagine every Sunday morning you had to show that body part to your friends at church? Honestly, most of us would run screaming, right? But that's kind of what we're putting our kids through when we don't prepare them. So think, is it going to be reading aloud? Is it going to be writing? And so what you got to do is you got to clue in the adults in charge, okay,
privately,
not in front of any other kids, not in front of your kid, okay, but you got to do it privately. And it's really important. Now, this is really hard because, see, it was 10 years or more before I could really wrap my head around the fact that what Samuel had was a diagnosable learning disability, because he was so intelligent. And to me, when I heard special needs, I pictured kids that were like near institutional level. And I didn't really, you know, it was, even though I'd seen my brother go through it, it was hard for me to comprehend that somebody that I knew was practically a genius could have a diagnosable learning disability. Now, it's really important when you're asking for help in these situations that you use the word learning disability.
Because I'm not sure if you knew this, there are actually very serious legal protections for people with learning disabilities. Anything, autism or whatever, but this applies to things like dyslexia, dysgraphia, etc. They can lose their jobs, they can get into serious legal trouble if they don't help you.
And this is true of math, learning disabilities, everything, okay? So The ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, requires them, if they're accommodating the public in any way, to meet your needs. And so when you ask for help, you don't say, I've got a child and he's behind or he's not reading yet. No. You say, I have a child with a learning disability. Because when you use that word, even if you never use it in front of your child, okay, even if you never put it on a piece of paper, when you use that word when asking for help, they are required to help you. So, why don't you practice with me? I have a child with a learning disability. I have a child with a learning disability. Okay, you're not saying this to label your child. You're saying this to get them the help they need. Mm-hmm. Okay? And this was hard for me because I felt like it was cheating to ask for extra help. It's not. It's leveling the playing field. It's making it so that they can perform at the level that they're able to perform. Okay, now this is what got me. I didn't do this for many years, and I was wrong. Okay? Samuel came to me when he was in the 7th or 8th grade, and he said, I wish I could compete in the state history club contest like my brothers.
Oh, you see, there were cash prizes.
There were cash prizes and honor. They had a huge convention. Mm-hmm. Our state history club covers all the public schools in the state, all the private schools in the state. There's a lot of homeschool clubs. And we have this huge convention, and kids that win prizes get to come up to the front in front of all these other kids and get checks. Okay?
It's pretty sweet.
And he said, I wish I could do that. And a light bulb went on. And I picked up the phone. I called the North Carolina Museum of History that sponsors it. And I said, I have a child with a learning disability.
Ding.
Ding. Who would like to participate in the essay contest. Is it possible for him to dictate his essays? They said, sure. As long as he does his own research and whoever's taking the dictation writes down exactly what he says, no problem. And that year, Samuel took our state history quiz, which is a huge honor in our state, and scored number one in the state of North Carolina. Because he had somebody to write for him, and as soon as we leveled the playing field so that he wasn't at a disadvantage, he excelled. He beat everybody in the state, even the elite private schools.
This is something I just did with the SAT. I got testing, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I got accommodations, and there wasn't anything special. I got a scribe so that when I did the transition in between get the answer and write it down, I didn't make mistakes, which is a big thing for dyslexic kids. And I got time and a half. And what that did was it didn't give me any advantage over the other students. It just meant since I am about 50% slower than most kids, I got about 50% more time. And that leveled the playing field so that I could achieve what I was able to.
And so, and he had a scribe. He dictated his essay on the SAT. We just got his scores back, and he did amazingly well. And, you know, guys, you're not cheating. You're asking that, is it cheating if a child is missing a leg to let them use a crutches or a wheelchair?
Depends on how you look at it.
You know, no. It's making it the same for them. It's making them able to do what everybody else is doing. If you have a child who's struggling to read or struggling with math or struggling with writing, then asking for accommodations is merely letting them perform at the level they should be able to perform at. Okay? Not that I feel strongly about this at all. I regret some of the mistakes I made in this area. And now that I've learned I need to ask for accommodations, I need to ask for... Things are going so much better. Offer to help, because a lot of people struggle with whether to help or not because they just are overwhelmed. And so you say, you know, my son or my daughter needs a scribe to write this down for this class. And they're like, ugh, you know, I don't have anybody. Well, if I send one of their older siblings with them to be their scribe, or I have a friend who's willing to do it, lots of times they'll say, oh, okay, great. You know, so offer to help, offer to make it easier for them to give you the accommodations they need. And sometimes the child will resist getting accommodations.
One thing I didn't understand was, there's a couple of things I really didn't understand, but one of the things socially I didn't understand was in the community, there are a lot of people with learning disabilities. Now, you don't see them because they're
functioning normally as adults, just like your child's going to.
But as I learned with the preacher's wife, there's a ton of people. They know someone, they had a brother a sister, an uncle, just about everyone knows someone with a learning disability. And that means that people often aren't just willing to help, they're ecstatic to help. They're happy to.
And so they're likely to understand, they're glad to help. Most people have experience even with making accommodations for different situations, and they're not going to judge them. Because Seema's really worried, you know, will they think I'm trying to get extra stuff, or, you know, will they look down on me? No, they're not going to. Another situation you can do with social situations is send them with help. This works in the informal situations like a homeschool science class or a Sunday school class. Get their siblings to help.
This is one thing one of my siblings did. Did my mom prompt anything? No.
She didn't prompt him.
Whenever we'd get anywhere, he would just step up in front of me and would just, not awkwardly, he'd just step forwards and would write out his name tag and then would just do mine. You know, just like a husband might do for a wife or something. And he ripped it off and he said, here, I did yours while I was at it. And so I was so thankful because that just relieved that ginormous amount of pressure off of me.
And that was Samuel's next older brother, Matthew, just mm-hmm. 2 years older. So they were in a lot of the same things together. And that just casually stepping in and filling out name tags, or if there was sign-up forms, you know, they'd give everybody a sign-up form. Matthew, just take his and fill it out. You know, and or take notes for them, you know, or take their turn reading. You know, I remember being in a Bible study one time with our church, and everybody was taking a turn reading, and it got around to Sam, and Matthew didn't even say anything. He just started reading for him. You know, and it builds relationship among your siblings like you cannot believe.
It really does.
You know, these guys are best friends now, you know? Mm-hmm. Tell them about the Free Enterprise Leadership Challenge thing. And I mean, really tell them how you feel, okay?
So the Free Enterprise Leadership Challenge back in North Carolina is a challenge for basically 200 of the smartest and brightest business-oriented kids in the state to go here. It's a giant competition. You know, you can win scholarships, all sorts of stuff. So we got there. It's
like
an entrepreneurship camp.
It's at a
college over a weekend. So we got there, and the guy gets up on stage, and he says, okay, you know, he lays it out for us. You're 200 of the smartest kids in the state. Here's the deal. We've got a half hour before lunch. You could walk over to the snack bar and get something to eat. You could explore the campus. You could go explore the town. But I want y'all to all go back to your dorms as fast as you can and write an essay. He said, the winner of this essay will get a $4,000 per year scholarship to the school of his choice to just help with spending money and books and stuff. Just like, oh, boy. I mean, at that time, my heart was practically beating on my chest. I was thinking, everybody's going to write this but me. It's going to be incredibly obvious. So we walked back to the room and to our dorm room. I was rooming with my brother. Matthew, who is a whiz, sits down and opens up his laptop and just kind of gives a little shoulder waggle like, ooh, I'm good, and then gets to work. And about 5 minutes later, it seemed, it's just like, okay, I'm done. And he turns and he looks at me, and I'm having an existential fit all over the pillow. And he's just like, so what are you going to write about? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, once you get it figured out, just dictate it. I'll write it. I tell you, at that moment, I'm pretty sure he had a halo and there were angels singing, But it was amazing. It was acts like that where it didn't really cost him anything, but was big, big thing for me that really bonded us together.
And, you know, now they're adults, but they still do so much together. They talk on the phone. Matthew's away at college. They communicate all the time because it built a bond together. So you've got to talk to the siblings about this in advance because, you know, most 13, 15-year-old kids are thinking about themselves, right? And so you've got to encourage them to become protectors of their siblings. You can protect your brother. Can you imagine how it would feel if you didn't know how to write your name tag, or if your name tag was like a billboard that said, hey, I'm different, you know? And teach them to protect their siblings. Tell them that's a way that they can show their love in a very active way. You know, and it builds enormous family unity.
It really does.
I mean, I just cannot tell you what a difference this made to these guys' relationship that they walked through this together. Because in walking through it with his brother, it wasn't just Matthew doing things for Samuel. Matthew learned compassion and learned to look for the needs of other people who were struggling, you know, in a way that he would not have gotten otherwise because it all came very easy to him. Okay? And so when he experienced that, of trying, seeing things through his brother's eyes, it made him a better man too. You got to teach the value of reading, and this is hard when reading to them is like the thing I can't do. You know, it's like someone who lives at the beach and can't swim, you know.
It must be like the kid with no arms, and then you ask him to play basketball. He's just like, shoot. Okay. You know, it's just impossible in their minds.
Okay. How do you teach them to value reading? You've got to teach them the love of story. You do that by reading aloud. Make time. I know it's hard. Make time to read aloud. If you have a child who's reading, but they're not really reading fluently yet, or they don't really like reading yet, stop at critical moments and put the book down. And when they say,
"Is that entrapment?"
Yeah. If they say, "Oh, come on, keep reading," say, I don't have time, but if you want to pick it up, that's all right, and leave. You know?
Oh, boy.
As you're reading aloud, explain the hard words and the hard concepts. Because, see, the reading aloud is not just making them love story, but it's preparing them for when they're reading themselves. You want to pick out some fast-paced books that get them really interested, get their juices flowing, adventurous. Audiobooks are a great thing, too, for us moms of many who think, yeah, read aloud. I can't even get the laundry done. I don't have time to go to the bathroom. You know, audiobooks are awesome. I recommend that we tend to think of these kids and say, we need easy stuff. In this area, you need hard stuff. And this is why. Because if you get something like G.A. Henney, do you know about the G.A. Henney novels? He wrote historical fiction over 100 years ago. Because they're written over 100 years ago, he wrote them. They're just very complex language. I typed some into a Word document to see what reading level they were, and they were college level. They're written for 8 to 12-year-olds. But it's considered college level now. Our education system has declined that much. And when they listen to complex audiobooks, then they learn how the written language, formal written language, sounds. They learn to follow a thought through a very complex sentence. They learn to follow a thought through a complex paragraph. And when it's high interest, something like G.A. Henney or, you know, the Hero Tale, something that grasp their attention. There's fights, there's wars, there's adventures. It gives them the motivation to understand it. And the cool thing about it is then when the decoding clicks and they can decode easily, then they're going to race ahead in reading comprehension.
It was amazing. In my case, I listened to G.A. Henty's for hours and hours a day all throughout my childhood. Because mom understood this, she... I listened to him for hours and hours a day. So when I got the decoding deal, and when it clicked, I jumped from completely illiterate, like I couldn't read cat, up to like above a college level in under a year. Just boom.
Because a lot of reading comprehension at the younger ages is, you know, how can I understand this thought? Well, when they already understand how to understand the thought, how to follow the thought, then it's just the decoding that's standing between them and understanding it. Does that make sense? Okay. And that prepares them to fly. You know, you also can use these same things to keep them up to grade level in everything else. Read them their word problems in math. You know, read them their science book. Get their science book on audio tape. Audio tape. You see how old I am. CD, MP3 files. Apologia has a lot of their stuff on MP3s. You know, get them the audio version, because when the Lord gives us challenges in one sense, he tends to increase others. And so lots of times these kids are struggling with learning to read, will have an amazing ability to learn kinesthetically or to learn by hearing things. Okay, so take advantage of those things. You know, have them doing science hands-on. Have them making history projects hands-on. Reading aloud, you're using all their other senses and all their other abilities to take in the information. You got to build their confidence, and this is tough, okay? And we got to really hurry because we're running late.
Yeah.
Praise is so important because we feel frustrated because we feel like failures, and we tend to pass on that frustration, that feeling of failure to them. They need praise. And so you want to look for any sign of the godly virtues you see in them. The slightest movement, and praise that with an example, because they feel so bad about themselves, they're not going to believe it if it just sounds like flattery. Okay, so you say, you know what? You have amazing diligence. I know how hard this is for you, and you have stuck with it. That is, you know, that diligence to stick through a hard task is really great. So you call out those virtues, praise the virtues, and look for different talents they have. Samuel is a born businessman. And so several years ago when his two older brothers were 17 and 15 and he was 13, they bought grainoftruthbreadcompany.com from another homeschool family. They sell grain mills over the internet. Samuel's run it practically on his own for 4 years. Well, don't you think it gives him confidence when he picks up the phone and talks to customers and they have no idea he's a kid? And he calls his suppliers and says, you know, you really blew it here. You didn't send this grain mill on time. I need you to make this right. And he's negotiating with suppliers. And nobody has any idea he's a teenager. You know, and so look for talents they have. Look for ministry talents. Call them out. Praise them in it. Athletics has been one for Sam. Tell him about when you were 11 and you're struggling in the midst of the struggle of learning to read.
So one night after football practice, you have to understand we have a homeschool football league in North Carolina, so I'm playing with all homeschool Christian guys. But right after football practice, me and my brother were walking away. We were on the same team at that point. And the coach came jogging over, and he was tremendously out of shape, so he's huffing and puffing. I was thinking, yeah, fitness is such a big thing. You make us run all the time, but you don't do it yourself. But he gets over there to us. And he goes, so, Matthew, I've been thinking, and I think you should stay down from varsity one more year. And Matthew was just like, Coach, I'm only, what was it, 14?
13.
13. I've got another 2 years. Coach was just like, my word, son, you're a big boy. And he was just thrilled because he's got a skilled player to come back for two more years in JV. He's thinking, how big will he be by the end of all this? And then he goes,
and he
Samuel,
thought they were twins.
Yeah, he thought we were twins, or he was confused about the ages, and he said, Samuel, I understand you're a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, etc., and I know you really want to go up there and play with the big boys, but I think you should stay back for just one more year. I want to see what you can do next year. I said, Coach, I'm only 11. And Coach was just like, my word! He was just thrilled. He said, I'm going to have an entire football team out of this one guy. I won't need anyone else. And he praised me. He just genuinely praised me for something I was good at. And that was amazing to me. And ever since, I've loved athletics because I felt like I was good at it.
And now he's being recruited to play college football. You know, find things they're good at, things they can succeed at, things they can be the best at, and do what it takes to let them do it, okay? You know, this is going to develop character in both of you.
Oh, boy. Yes, it will.
You're going to learn endurance, diligence, creativity, mercy, gratefulness, like your friend's attitude toward reading. You had gratefulness for learning to read. Compassion for other people going through it. It's going to grow you both, and it's good. Okay, it's a good thing that God's going to use for good in your life. Now, so what now, though? Where do you go from here? The question has always been, what about testing? I was very resistant to testing because I didn't want him labeled. But finally I realized, we got to know what's going on here. And I had him tested. Now that I have a high schooler, I'm realizing that what we fell into was what you need to do. About third or fourth grade, if they're not reading by then, you need to have them tested. And this is why, because I know you're looking at this child and you're thinking, I'm gonna hope I can teach them, at 14 I was thinking this, I didn't tell you this, I hope I can teach them to learn well enough to fill out an application to flip hamburgers.
Ouch.
Okay. At 17, 18, we're talking to college coaches, but we're also talking to college academic scholarship committees, okay, because he took off once he learned to read. Okay, and so a couple of things. Yes, testing can be expensive, and it's not a cure. It will not cure your child. And avoid the public school testing if you can, because they have a lot of motivation to talk you into coming to their school because they get a lot of money. But it can help you realize you're not crazy. It can help them realize that they're not dumb. You know, I didn't want to tell Sam the results of the testing, and he demanded I did. When I told him, it was actually a huge relief.
It really was. It told me, you know, I have a real problem. It's not I'm retarded or anything. It's just this. And I because I knew that it was just dyslexia, I knew there's a solution for this. If if you know what the problem is, you can always find an answer. And that was a giant relief for me.
And it helped us realize the seriousness of the problem, because when we got Samuel's testing back, he was like 97th percentile in verbal intelligence. Okay, that's like near genius level. And third percentile in some things like spelling and reading, and which is near institutional level. And when we realized that the scope of the situation, it motivated me to spend the time with him to help him more. And now his scores have, you know, the bottom one has come way up, but because we were able to get him to that point, it's very critically important you get them tested before high school.
Why is that?
Because you don't know, but this child may want to go to college. Okay, and if they want to go to college, they are going to need accommodations on the SAT, most likely. And they are very suspicious of people who don't do testing until high school, because a lot of rich people want to get their kids have testing to show they have an issue in high school so that they get extra time, so that they score higher, and they get into daddy's alma mater. You know, and so they're very suspicious if there's no history of accommodations. Now, what do you mean by history of accommodations? Just keep a record, keep one page of, I let them dictate things. I let them dictate essays. You know, I give them extra time on tests. That's
it.
Yeah, with your dates. Okay, what about programs? Check backgrounds and references. There's somebody out there selling a learning disabilities program that has literally a mail order diploma. She calls herself, she has a doctorate, but it's literally, if you look the school up, it's a mail order diploma. Okay, and I don't mean a correspondence school. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so check backgrounds and references. If they say they can cure everything, run, don't walk. You can't. It's not going to happen. More expensive is not necessarily better. Okay, you feel like, I need the Cadillac. Sometimes the Cadillac is just a kit car on a Volkswagen base. Okay. Sometimes a kid needs glasses. Sometimes they need vision therapy. I'm just mentioning these things because these are things you're going to need to look into and research. Diet and supplements sometimes make a difference. Fish oil, probiotics.
I'd like to know on glasses, it may be just translation in their brain, because I had glasses till I was about 11 or 12, and then once we found out I had dyslexia, we went to the optometrist and we talked to him, and he said, oh, duh. He thought that I had like horrendously bad eyes. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
But then he tested me in a different way.
Without letters?
Yeah, without letters. All of a sudden, I was 20/20.
Yeah. So make sure your optometrist knows not to test them with letters. Okay.
You can save a lot of money.
Yeah. Sometimes color and graphics can make a difference. Like when they're learning how to spell, Diane Kraft talks about this. Writing the word big and just coloring the letters that they're missing can make them store it in a different part of their brain.
Store it as graphics rather than individual pieces.
Typically, kids that have struggles learning to read, dyslexic kids, have trouble communicating between the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain. And so they have trouble connecting the symbol, which is stored in one half, to the sound. And so if you've got a picture of how that goes with, like a phonics flashcard typically has like a picture of kangaroo and a K down here, they need the K on the kangaroo so it's stored in the same place in their mind, okay? Gadgets. One of our sons reads super fast. He can read a 400-page novel in a couple hours, but he's horribly dysgraphic. I mean, writing is horribly painful for him. Well, my brother gave him a laptop, and he found out very quickly that he could type like mad. And so, because typing uses a different part of the brain than handwriting. Mm-hmm. And so he had no problem typing, whereas handwriting stunk. Well, yeah, in college, the times you have to handwrite something are pretty small. The typing is much better. If you get a program and it's not working for you, or it's not what you need, feel free to pitch it and resell it. Okay. Let's say you find a program you're going to use it. One that helped us a lot was the Brain Integration Therapy Manual by Diane Kraft. It was a lot of stupid-looking exercises. Okay, they stand there and they go, like, do this number, and they draw figure eights on paper and stuff. How'd you feel about that, baby?
Well, often when you feel deficient, like if you have a learning disability or if you're just learning slower, you're so afraid that other people won't take you seriously that you take yourself too seriously. And so at this time, I was the most grown-up 11-year-old you would ever meet. I mean, suit and tie, that sort of a kid. And I hated this because I felt like it was child's play. I felt like it was below me. And Mom made me do it for a very specific period of time.
I said, we're going to do this every school day for 1 year. And let me tell you, he threw a fit every single day that year. I don't mean most days. I don't mean small fits. I mean, he threw a temper tantrum every single day that year. But that's the year he learned to read fluently. Okay? So, yeah, be firm. Slow and steady. Be firm. Insist. Keep it private, though. If he's having to do things that embarrass him, do it in a different room than the siblings. Don't let the siblings mock him. Samuel's siblings try that, so I decided to make everybody do it.
Yeah, that stopped. Yeah.
That stopped really quick. How can you afford this stuff? Let me assure you that God provides. You know, there, God will provide things in amazing ways. If you don't believe that, you need to go out to our podcast. Hal and I have a podcast, halandmelanie.com/radio, and listen to how God provided a van for us in 6 days, okay, in March. Some of you have heard that story. God will provide for you. Sometimes he delays providing for a reason. We were struggling with finances. And it was a while before we finally, the Homeschool Foundation paid for Samuel's testing and for his dye and craft stuff. They have a special needs fund that you can apply for. Because we're in full-time ministry. We barely make it every month. And this is really neat because that delay was part of God's plan. I have a friend who went through the same thing. And they didn't have the money, and they didn't have the money. And finally, you know, God provided, her husband got called into active duty service, and they were able to get the stuff that they needed free. God has a plan, and if he's not providing what you need, pray, ask for help, ask your friends, apply for help, but trust that he's going to provide what you need, and maybe that's not what you need, the thing that you can't afford.
And maybe he's delaying to create a situation where you'll grow. I mean, I have determination and strength of character in many, many different places because I learned to read so late, and because it was so hard, I developed a grittiness when it comes to determination that will really help me.
A grittiness to this extent. Samuel decided he wanted that his best chance of getting college paid for was football. So 2 years ago, we couldn't afford a gym membership. He went on Craigslist and he started collecting gym equipment piece by piece. We didn't have a place to put it. He put it in the backyard. He worked out every single day in our backyard, in the sun, in the snow, in the sleet, in the rain. But, you know, he did it every day because he developed that gritty determination. I have a goal. I'm going to reach it, whatever it takes. And there are tons of inexpensive resources, like the Brain Integration Therapy Manual is maybe $40 or $50. Okay? Let's talk for a moment about reaching a goal. I told you about my brother who was stood up before and mocked in schooling. My mother went to bat for him. When he applied to college, she made sure he applied to a college that had a strong Office of Disability Support Services. He went to college. They got him all his textbooks on tape back then. It was a long time ago. Got him all his textbooks on tape. Assigned people to be his scribe. He dictated all his tests. He graduated with a BS. He is now a millionaire entrepreneur in Shanghai, China. All right? He's successful. Samuel, he didn't learn to read till he was 11. At 14, really seriously could not spell three-letter words. It came to me when he was 16 and said, Mom, I think we need to write a magazine article. Okay, what about? And he said, I don't think people are supporting their kids enough in this reading struggle thing. We need to talk about that. So we wrote an article for the Old Schoolhouse magazine. And then after he saw the response that got that fall, he said, Mom, I think we need to do a workshop about this. I said, now hang on, baby. You haven't wanted anybody to know about this. You haven't wanted to talk about it. And if I put this in our speaking catalog, then if somebody puts it under contract, there's not going to be you can't do this, I don't feel like talking about it when the time comes. You've got to stand there and talk about it. He kind of went, glump. He said, all right, I think it's important. And now we've done this session all over the country. And, you know, Samuel is applying to college. His scores are great for college. He just took the AP U.S. History exam. AP U.S. History is the hardest high school class there is. Just took the AP U.S. History exam. I'm sure he did great on it. There's hope. You're going to get there. You know, and the Lord used this in my life. Because I thought I was a fantastic homeschooler, and the Lord put something in my life that I could not control. And he taught me that this is not about me. It's not about pride. It's not about being a super homeschooler. It's about serving him and serving my children. It's about taking care of my children and walking with them through trial. It's about glorifying the God through overcoming the trials that are here, because it's a fallen world. And our bodies and brains don't work perfectly in every instance. But is God still not God? And, you know, high school is coming. And it's going to be amazing what your kids are going to do there. Something, you know, I remember Samuel not being able to spell anything was really on my nerves. Okay, I was worried to death about it. I mean, he literally could not spell Y-O-U, okay, in the eighth grade. Well, I talked to Diane Kraft about it at a conference. She recommended, you know, doing the big, putting it on cardstock, writing the words out, decorating the letters he struggled with. I got the 100 most common words in the English language off the internet. And we worked on the 100 most common words in English language. And they were a challenge to the, you know, I mean, basic words, but they were a challenge. Once we got the 100 most common words down pat, then Samuel got a bunch of kids in our church were doing MemVerse. It's an online Bible memory program. Samuel said, I'm going to do this. I'm like, yeah, right. But he did. Because he got on there, the typing was much easier than the writing. And in memorizing the Word of God, he learned to spell all those words. Now,
I spell like the old King James, but I can spell.
Yeah, if it's not in the Bible, forget it. But, you know, God is building an incredible story in your lives. He's building a testimony in your life and in your child's life. And the struggle to learn to read is part of it. It's a part of it that one day you're going to tell people about. Maybe just your grandchildren, and tell them the amazing strength their mother or father had when they were children. You know, God is building something. This is not whimsical. It's not by accident. It's from the hands of a sovereign God who loves you and is going to glorify himself through your lives. I encourage you to come by our booth, okay? If you're having trouble finding our booth, you look for this banner, okay, the bricks and the Great Waters Press, that's the name of our company. And you'll see a rowboat bristling with rubber band guns and kids shooting rubber band guns. That's us, okay? We carry the G.A. Henney audiobooks. These are the only ones we recommend. They're read by Jim Hodges, and they're unabridged.
That's very important as a complex structure that you really need.
I don't want it made easier, you know. I want them to hear the hard stuff. The thing about G.A. Henney's, though, is people had a longer attention span then. So the first two or three chapters are kind of boring as he's setting the scene. So you're going to have to force your kids to listen to the first three chapters. Then they will force you to listen to the remaining 11 hours of it, okay? So, you know, be aware you're going to have to get them through that. Another resource we have is Hero Tales from American History. It's written by Theodore Roosevelt and Henry Cabot Lodge to teach character to American kids through the stories of America's heroes. It the cool thing about it is that it has that complex language and sentence structure, but we added sound effects because history is way better with cannon fire and screaming French mobs, ask anybody. Mm-hmm. And that will help your child to focus to tune into it. This is a new one we have this year. Pollyanna, my daughter brought it to me. This isn't the Disney-fied version. This is the real antique 100 years ago. My daughter brought it to me and said, Mom, could you read this, see if I ought to read it? I didn't want to read it. I'd heard people called Pollyannas. It sounded preachy and boring. I couldn't stop laughing. So we decided to do it as a family read aloud. And yeah, the little girls loved it. But my teenage boys were saying, hey, Mom, are you reading Pollyanna in there? Yeah. Can you wait till I'm done with the dishes? I want to hear it. It's hilarious. Our whole family loved it.
It really is. And it's a great attitude changer. That's one thing I noticed. One of my younger sisters completely changed her attitude over the course of Mom reading this to her.
It teaches you to rejoice in all things, okay?
Indeed.
And another audio product we have, Hope wrote this when she was a 13-year-old homeschool girl. Her dad challenged her to write a short story about what it was like to be a slave in ancient Egypt. She fell in love with her characters and over the course of her high school career wrote and rewrote A Cry from Egypt. She brought it to me and she said, do I pack it in a box or find a publisher? I was stunned. I said, I want to publish it. Won 2014 Christian Small Publishers Book of the Year. And it's now required in 3 homeschool curriculums, including Taps to Your Grace. And the thing I want to tell you about is we just came out with a radio theater version with over 50 actors.
We had over 50 voice actors. We hired a professional composer to write the soundtrack. It's dramatized as a real sensational piece.
Yeah. And one last audio thing. 10 Peas in a Pod, these were one of the original homeschool families in the 1950s. They were traveling evangelists. They were upset at what the public schools were teaching their kids, so they just took them out and took them on the road with them. Nobody ever heard of homeschooling. They were also very poor, and they struggled. Sometimes they had to stop and mix up fertilizer and sell fertilizer to get gas to go to the next town where they were scheduled to speak. And this book prepared our children for our ministry lifestyle, and it taught them that God will provide.
Thankfully, Mom and Dad don't know how to make the fertilizer, so.
Yeah, we haven't had to do that yet. And the audiobook is read by Arnold Pint, who is the author, who is the 17-year-old son in the story. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry we ran a little bit late.